This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Resource Center. I'm Angeline Tay. From a relatively unheard company, Freelancer has grown to become the biggest marketplace for freelancers in 6 years. They've acquired over 14 companies. And could this be the strategy to their growth? Joining us today is Deputy CTO of Freelancer, Christopher Kosh, talking about the growth strategies for Freelancer.
Well, thanks very much. We are the world's largest marketplace for jobs. Not jobs in a traditional employment classified sense where you scroll down a list and see a bunch of things that you could apply for, but real work projects. They range from $10 or $20 through to tens of thousands of dollars. I spent about 10 years in investment banking before joining the business. I followed Freelancer for a long time, and I look after our sort of public-facing work with investors and the market, part of our finance team, bit of general counsel and our strategy in mergers and acquisitions.
What about Freelancer that attracted you?
It is a fundamentally different online business that actually changes the market that it's in. So if you think about a lot of interesting online businesses, they have typically sort of followed a train of migration. So classifieds, for example, in automotive, real estate, employment, it really took what was a product from print to online. You used to get it printed, now it's online. The feature set's better, but the opportunity set is still very similar. Freelancer is effectively eBay for jobs, and it's borderless in the sense that we're in literally every country, all of them, as far-flung as the Vatican and Antarctica, everywhere. And it enables people to get online, and providing you've got a connection, you need a connection and a device, obviously, to be an internet participant. But if you have that, you can then access a huge pool of work from all over the world. And if you're in small business or you're an entrepreneur or an individual and you need people to work with you on a project, you can access that instantly. It's a very, very liquid marketplace. And what that does is, rather than just move something from print to online, it's actually creating a very new, very different and fundamentally transformative market for work.
Now, how is that different from other crowdfunding, paper project websites out there?
Look, what sets us apart as a business is 20 million users and a huge amount of liquidity. So marketplaces in a whole bunch of verticals and a whole bunch of geographies trend towards winner-takes-all behaviour, largely because buyers want to go where sellers are and sellers want to go where buyers are, in the same way that, you know, in Malaysia, there's a dominant online property classified business, there's a dominant online automotive business. You see these sort of trends together. We have just over two-thirds of our projects which get a bid within 60 seconds of being posted, which is very powerful. If you are an entrepreneur and you want someone to design your logo and that's your project, or it might be build my website, do a financial model, or do this analysis for me, translate a document, whatever the category of work may be, you can get a bid within a minute. In fact, you're more than likely to, which is very powerful.
I know it's huge, the database you have on your website. Can you give us an average of how many new jobs show up on the site every day?
You can actually pick that information off the front page of the website. We have a ticker that rolls in real time. We're a very transparent business. So in the middle of the week, the kind of, you know, Monday through Friday, for most of the world, we're based in Sydney in Australia, and you realise very quickly when you work in a global business that that Monday in Australia is really the weekend everywhere else in the world. But we'd see between 5,000-6,000 projects that are posted on a given day. The average size of those projects is around about $150-$160 US.
Could you walk us through the growth of Freelancer? I mean, it's massive right now, but you know, since 2009 when it started, and how much has it grown since then?
Yeah. So Matt Barry, who's the founder of the business and the executive chairman and CEO, actually came upon this idea and bought a business to start what is now a Freelancer. He'd spent about 10 years in Silicon Valley working in a semiconductor business, which he sold to Intel, you know, a much, much more capital-intensive style of business than an online marketplace. He came back to Australia in 2009 and wanted someone to do some data entry for him. Really struggled to find anyone who would do data entry, you know, a dollar a row in Excel. Basic task. And he Googled something like cheap data entry and found a business called getafreelancer.com, which he used and really liked. And he's very insightful at the time. In 2009, put pen to paper and thought to himself, there is a marketplace for secondhand goods, eBay. There's a marketplace for firsthand goods like Amazon. At the time, Alibaba was still emergent, but you had all these sort of marketplaces. And he formed the view that there should be a global marketplace for services. Rather than trying to, you know, build completely from scratch, which is hard when you, at some point eBay would have had nothing to sell, no one to buy and, you know, no volume. So starting a marketplace from scratch is very difficult. He raised a very small amount of venture capital and bought getafreelancer.com. And then over the course of the 3 or 4 years after 2009, the space was quite fragmented. So there were, you know, a bunch of businesses that had that, you know, $1 or $2 or $3 million sort of revenue line, relatively small. And Matt did a roll up of the space and bought, you know, a dozen or more businesses to actually pool into what is now the very large pool of liquidity that's in the core part of our business.
So that was your main strategy, to grow by acquiring businesses.
There's a lot of organic at the same time. And so it's interesting in an online business, and for me coming from a more analytical background in investment banking, in a lot of businesses you'll see people try and unpack and look at, say, what is organic and what, you know, was acquired growth. In our business, acquisitions really are benchmarked to the cost of otherwise acquiring a user. So they've been very compelling in terms of that growth. So in a way, the acquired versus organic is not as relevant a metric. But since 2009, the business has now grown to just under 20 million users. We'll click through that at some point in the next couple of months.
And what has the financial growth of Freelancer been like over the last year?
So over the last year, I mean, we also acquired a small payments business called escrow.com. It's like a secure version of PayPal, a way to pay people with no chargebacks and no reversals. And that's contributed a little bit to our growth. The five-year revenue growth CAGR on the business is just over 50%. And the business has been growing in that 40 to 50% range on core revenue for quite some time. The user growth has also been pretty consistent at levels, you know, slightly below the revenue growth numbers.
And would you say it's a profitable business?
We run the business to be break-even, so it's slightly loss-making on an operating EBITDA basis, but it's also positive operating cash flow, because marketplace businesses, when they run well, actually do drop out cash and are not capital-intensive to run. So we've targeted running it at around flat on the P&L and reinvesting a lot of marginal revenue each year into additional headcount. So they're just under 500 people, I think 460 or 470 people who are working for the business. That headcount growth is sort of starting to taper off as well as you reach a critical mass in a business that, you know, designs, ships and enhances its online product all the time, and also, you know, supports people using the platform as well.
And I guess human capital wouldn't be an issue because you have so many of them on your platform.
It's one of the problems that we don't have. When you need that marginal person, you need someone to, you know, format a presentation or do some design work or do some research work, you know, whatever it is, it's very important. Everyone in our business uses the platform in that way. It also keeps you very close to the product, to the user experience, to everything that you need to you know, really focus on and make sure that that everything is running as it should be.
Now, how difficult was it in the initial days of Freelancer and, you know, breaking into different countries, penetrating into different market? How did you do that? And now you've grown globally at this point. We'll find out more after this. We are in the studio with Christopher Kosh, Deputy CFO at Freelancer, and this is Resource Center. I'm Angeline Tay, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're still listening to Resource Center. In the studio, we have Christopher Kosh, Deputy CFO at Freelancer. And Freelancer is the world's largest online services market. Place with nearly 20 million users across 247 countries. Now, when you expand your team, do you have, you know, certain kind of playbooks? You know, tell us, share with us, how did you manage to penetrate into different markets?
I should flag the 247 is countries, regions, and territories, because
right.
I think there are only about 190 something countries, but we are everywhere in that sense. A couple of things have been, there are two interesting observations that you can make that are relevant, you know, for a lot of people listening and growing their own businesses. The first of which is that for a long period of time, the US has been the number one market on one side of our marketplace for employers. By number of users, India has been, you know, one of the largest marketplace countries for us in our marketplace on the freelancing side. We haven't had a physical presence in either of those countries. So I think one of the takeaways is that as you structure and plan this growth, you don't necessarily need to have people on the ground in every country, depending on your product or your service or your business. The other point that has been a real focus of that international growth has been on ensuring that there's a low friction, really smooth experience for people in each country. And the two things that you absolutely have to really nail to get that right are language and currency. So, and currency sort of relates to payments as well. So people want to see a correctly localized version of their site, not just in their language. Spanish, for example, just spoken in dozens of countries, localization becomes very important to exactly where you are. And hand in hand with that is currency, where you want to be able to pay in your local currency.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, you know, don't want to do a transaction in, if you're sitting in KL, you might not want to do a transaction in US dollars. A lot of people don't want that kind of, you know, FX and other sort of friction in how they pay. So we've been very focused on growing the number of currencies that we support. And as we do that, having a, you know, wherever you can, having a local banking or payment gateway and sort of financial provider.
And also you mentioned about escrow, which now serves as your payment gateway. Give us some insight on that. Why escrow instead of other payment methods like PayPal?
So escrow actually at the moment is 100% third party in terms of its volume. So we bought the business and closed the acquisition in November of last year. Escrow is different to other payment methods because it is a way to pay where you don't have that fear of reversals or chargebacks. So if you think about products like PayPal and others, they typically come with buyer protection. So as a merchant, as a seller, you can be in a position where you complete your transaction, you may have delivered services, you may have shipped your goods, that payment's not finalised. 2-3 weeks later, you could still get someone say, oh, no, sorry, for whatever reason, we have a dispute and I'm going to reverse that payment. The same situation occurs frequently with credit cards. Anyone who takes credit cards in their small business, as an individual, however you take credit card payments, almost certainly will be aware of credit card chargebacks, where you've completed a transaction and the window for chargebacks can be long. It can be 3 or even 6 months in some jurisdictions. You can suddenly be in a situation where you get a message and say, look, sorry, there's been a chargeback and a reversal around this. Escrow is a way to pay where your process, the flow of how your transaction is completed with escrow means that there are no chargebacks. So, for example, if I was going to buy a domain name from you, we hadn't met, we might be in very different parts of the world, that's a tricky transaction to pay for and complete because who goes first?
Yeah.
If I wire you the money and you don't send me the access credentials, I've got a big problem. And the flip side of that is true as well. Escrow is perfect for that. If we're going to complete a transaction like that, I put the money into escrow. It's held on trust for me, and the criterion is, you know, changing whatever the website is, .com, from you to me. We actually go and complete that, and websites are great because you can look in a DNS record and you can see very quickly when ownership is transferred. And then at that point, those funds are held on trust for you, and you can take them out. The funds are held off balance sheet. You know, it's a regulated business, and there's a lot of, you know, security in how you do that. And then having completed a transaction and paid with escrow.com, you don't have that sort of tail risk of, you know, is the next email I'm going to get going to be from my credit card gateway or,
yeah,
you know, however I process this payment saying, sorry, that money's coming back.
I've always been interested in the stability and security of such large websites. You obviously need solid infrastructure to ensure the site runs smoothly with such heavy traffic. So how does Freelancer maintain that, you know, its stability?
We use, and if you publicly listed business. So if you look at our financial statements, you'll see that capital expenditure in our business is very low. It's de minimis compared to the scope and scale of the business. And that's because we take advantage of a number of you know, what are commonly referred to as cloud or effectively you know, outsourcing our web hosting and our traffic hosting. We use a provider, Amazon AWS is one of them, and a whole bunch of other parts of a technical stack using distributed content delivery networks to make sure that the website is fast, you know, everywhere. Because 247 countries, regions and territories is a lot, and it's a two-sided marketplace. Messaging, our apps, these are all really important features of how we grow our business. You know, having some servers in a colo in Sydney, for example, kind of doesn't work for a global business like that. So we take advantage of, you know, services that are in the market to effectively cloud host our production, and that makes it, you know, stable and reliable.
How are cuts dividends on Freelancer? This is going back to your website. In percentages, how much does the company make and how much goes to the person providing the service?
So we've kept commissions low. We charge employers 3% as a commission and we charge freelancers 10%. And those are low commissions. We look to, you know, really grow our marketplace by reducing friction, just making it easy to use. Freelancer is free to join. It's free to sign up. It's free to post a project. It's free to bid on a project. It's free to talk to people. You can do a lot, really, before you ever have to pay us a fee. You effectively only pay that fee when you've got some work. So we're aiming to be just as easy as possible to use for everyone on both sides of that marketplace and build, you know, a healthy business on a modest commission on, you know, what is a very large addressable market of flow.
Okay. And one more thing, I can't let you go without asking about NASA and how they've embraced the crowdfunding sphere by posting contests on Freelancer. What was it like having them on board?
It was fantastic, to be honest. I mean, the bread and butter of the business is getting anything done for any individual and any small business anywhere. Everything from that design my logo through to whatever the other, you know, more complex pieces of work are. The NASA one was a fascinating example. They have a robot on the International Space Station and they're connecting legs to the robot. I was a bit surprised. I had no idea this robot's been up there for 3 years. Every time I see a movie about a robot on a space station, it kills everyone. It's quite concerning. Anyway, what they're trying to do with this is teach it to, amongst other things, go outside, do those EVAs, which are dangerous and expensive and time-consuming for astronauts to do, and have a robot that can crawl around and fix problems or do experiments or, you know, all the categories of things that they do. What they realized is they need a very accurate CAD model, computer-aided design, of every component that that robot's going to interact with. So some of the first contests that they put up on Freelancer were actually with a prize of $50 per component, you know, do a really detailed CAD model of. They started with a handrail. I think that was the first project that was posted. They've moved on to not just, you know, design and CAD modelling of existing components, but a couple of their most recent projects or contests that have been on Freelancer have been to design a robotic arm for a free-flying robot that buzzes around the space station using compressed air. It's really cool. And also a smartwatch app for astronauts. To, you know, track and be reminded and, you know, work in space. So it just shows you if NASA can use it, anyone can use it. And the results have, you know, really been quite remarkable.
What is Freelancer looking to achieve over the next year?
We are growing, and we do that by making the product better every day and by trying to be incrementally a little bit bigger every day. So a poster, an image that went around through the growth team and engineering teams in the business to illustrate the importance of growth like that. And it's if you grow 1% a day, so the sign was 1.01 to the power of 365, if you do that every day for a year, you end up with a business that's 30 or 40 times larger, you know, materially bigger. If you shrink 1% a day, you get to zero very, very quickly. You know, the inverse of that. So that's a constant reminder for us and for everyone running a business in that sense, that cumulatively making everything a little bit better every day and doing that cycle repeatedly, very high tempo, is how we grow.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I've been speaking to Christopher Koch, Deputy CFO at Freelancer, and you've been listening to Resource Center. I'm Angeline Tay, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.